Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here. And more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Big sighs of relief in New York, New Jersey, and Washington tonight as the workday ends without incident. On Sunday, Homeland Security Chief Tom Ridge issued a high-level Code Orange alert for financial institutions targeted for possible al-Qaeda attacks. The International Monetary Fund and World Bank buildings in Washington, the Citigroup Center and the New York Stock Exchange in Manhattan, and Prudential Financial in New Jersey. The quality of the intelligence, said Ridge, is rarely seen and is alarming in both the amount and specificity of the information. It's the first time the nation's five-stage terror alert has been elevated for specific targets. Authorities say they are taking it very seriously. Bridges and tunnels were closed to commercial vehicles in New York. In Washington, police swept the undersides of cars with bomb-tracking devices. Metal fences went up around the Prudential Plaza in New Jersey. But with no clear time frame attached, what do the warnings really mean? Tonight on Point, the story behind Tom Ridge's new terror warning over Wall Street and the symbols of American finance. What do you hear in the security chief's new terror warning? Real and present danger or vague, warmed-over intelligence? Politics or real peril? What's the message in this Code Orange? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight in Washington with the latest developments. Josh Meyer covers intelligence for the Los Angeles Times. Josh, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
So what's the buzz in Washington, D.C. today, the day after Tom Ridge came out with these very dramatic, very specific warnings, Josh?
Well, we've spent the whole day trying to figure out exactly what's going on, as is often the case here. It's hard to tell exactly what is specific information, what's new information, what's old information, but pretty much a picture starting to emerge that some of this new surveillance information that's been gained by U.S. authorities is new and that it's been obtained by al-Qaeda since 2004, which is fairly ominous and scary for the authorities.
In other words, they got it from al-Qaeda in 2004. We understand that an arrest of al-Qaeda-related folks in Pakistan relatively recently may have led to uncorking some of this information.
Right. Yeah, it's a little confusing. I'm sorry if I'm not being clear about it. But the arrest of the Pakistani operatives was over the past few weeks. It was probably coming all from one guy who's a computer-savvy al-Qaeda expert who was arrested in mid-July in Pakistan. But the surveillance information shows that al-Qaeda operatives were surveilling literally dozens or perhaps even hundreds of buildings in the United States and providing very detailed information about their security systems, the locations, how to best attack them, when to attack them, and so on and so forth. And it's that information that the U.S. officials have received recently that's gotten them quite alarmed.
Any further indication today, Josh, of the time frame of the access to this information, when it was gathered, before 9/11, after 9/11, recently? Is there an indication that there are still al-Qaeda cells actively surveilling these buildings? The time frame was pretty unclear in what came out yesterday.
Right. Well, I think sometimes they're purposefully unclear about that, A, because they don't want to let al-Qaeda know what they know, and B, they just don't want to really talk about it because it's classified information. And it's also, that's two issues in a sense. What I was just told, according to an intelligence document, is that, quote, it appears the information was updated as late as 2004 in at least some of the buildings. But that does not mean, however, that there's al-Qaeda operatives in place in those cities ready to launch an attack. It just means that there were people amassing information there and trying to figure out how to attack those buildings.
We've heard threats of all kinds since 9/11, from biological, chemical, nuclear. Tom Ridge was saying in his announcement yesterday that it looked, from the intelligence they had, like the, quote, preferred method of attack, car and truck bomb, plain old-fashioned car and truck bomb, Josh.
Right, pretty low tech. I mean, that has been sort of their tried and true method of attack for many, many years. I mean, the two attacks against U.S. embassies in Africa in 1998 were both truck bombs. The first World Trade Center attack was a truck bomb, and they've had great success with that. And as the U.S. hardens targets, you know, like the White House and the Capitol, for instance, going after other targets with truck bombs is a very nimble, easy, and low-cost way to go, according to al-Qaeda's own information.
And what about the measures taken in response to this warning? So now we've got Code Orange. Of course, New York has had it ever since 9/11. Now we've got it in these other specific locations as well. And yet, with such a vague time frame, they're saying not imminent. On the other hand, other officials have said near term. Can authorities be expected to keep up intense security measures sort of perpetually at these particular buildings? Does that make sense?
Well, it's sort of like finding a needle in a haystack. I mean, every time we upgrade the security at one location, according to our intelligence, al-Qaeda will try to find another place to attack. In fact, in overseas countries, what they're trying to do is go after, you know, softer targets like hotels and even restaurants and discos and nightclubs and things like that. So it's hard to tell exactly what would be successful and what wouldn't be. But I guess what, you know, Secretary Ridge was saying yesterday and they continue to say today, appears to make sense, which is that when you have information like this, you pretty much have to do something. You have to move against it and beef up your security.
And then,
so they're in a hard position in terms of what they should and shouldn't do.
But what about for people who work in these buildings? We just heard the report from NPR of people calling home on the hour, every hour, to assure their spouse or family that they're okay. Is that just going to become a perpetual fact of life for these people, or do you think this is something that's going to float on by and evaporate?
Well, it could pass after the election, but several of the people I talked to today said that according to this intelligence that they just gleaned, this may not end at the election, that this may be something that's more longer term. I mean, al-Qaeda has been known to surveil buildings for many years before attacking them. The two embassy bombings, like I mentioned, in Africa, those buildings were under surveillance for several years, I think. So, you know, this may not be something that is targeted specifically for the election. It may last longer than that, too.
And finally, Josh, what about President Bush's word today in the Rose Garden that he's prepared to act, at least in degree, on some of the 9/11 Commission's recommendations, creating a new National Intelligence Director and National Intelligence Directorate? How's that being received in the intelligence community? Welcomed, or is there going to be a kind of a back guard action fighting against that?
Well, I would describe the reaction as decidedly mixed to that. I mean, even acting CIA Director John McLaughlin, who's been in the agency for 30 years or so, went public on TV a few Sundays ago and said that he didn't think another layer of bureaucracy was what was needed. There are people who do feel that it is a good idea, and so I guess the truth will come out sometime in the future.
Well, we'll be watching. Josh Meyer, thanks a lot for joining us from Washington.
You're welcome.
Josh Meyer covers intelligence for the Los Angeles Times. He spoke with me from Washington, D.C. Joining me now in the studio is Juliette Kayyem. She's a senior fellow in national security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government and formerly served as Congressman Dick Gephardt's representative to the National Commission on Terrorism. Juliette Kayyem, thanks for being with us tonight.
Good evening, Tom.
So let's begin to wade into this. Here we are all of a sudden, almost right at the end of the Democratic convention, when there's a big head of steam, at least in the Democrats' minds, behind John Kerry and John Edwards. And suddenly, here it is again, Tom Ridge in front of national television cameras. You know, up goes the alert and a new spin,
right.
Specific information, not like before. What do you make of what's unfolding in front of us here?
I do think this one is different. I've been incredibly critical of the threat alert system, both because I think it was poorly managed and hard to read, but also I think in some instances in the past it might have been used politically. This one seems different on a variety of levels, both because they're disclosing where the information's coming from, but also they're actually targeting what cities should be worried, so that these broad announcements that everyone should be fearful are no longer the sort of course. And that's the process that the Department of Homeland Security has been learning over the course of the last year. And so my sense is that this one is different. As to the politics of this, I think it's interesting. To me, it is not entirely clear which way this cuts politically. I mean, if you're thinking, you know, totally politically about this, I think the White House is incredibly nervous that they are going to be accused of crying wolf. And I think, as the LA Times reporter just a minute ago said, when you get this kind of information, they basically at this stage have no choice but to disclose it.
Because if it comes out later that they had it and something happens and they didn't disclose it, everyone's going to be down their necks.
Yeah, it will be September 11th all over again. I mean, if you read the 911 Commission report and you read those chapters about the summer of 2001, you're hitting yourself in the head saying, why didn't anyone tell the American public, at least tell the pilots, at least tell the airline industry that this stuff was going on? And so they don't want to be in that position again where it looks like they didn't learn from past mistakes.
To people who follow Al-Qaeda and its work, is this level of detail surprising, shocking, or just presumed? Well, they're talking about very detailed reports, blueprints of the Prudential Center in New Jersey, very close notes on security measures, security cameras, architecture, pedestrian traffic, nearby shops where they could kind of hide out or be camouflaged. Is this astounding, or is this just presumed that this is how they work?
It's astounding in only one sense, in that they clearly feel pretty comfortable doing reconnaissance in America. I mean, I think a lot of us think it must be harder for terrorists to sort of figure out what's going on in America after 911. And at least these reports suggest that they're having no problems looking at these buildings. It's not new in one important sense. I was at the Department of Justice at the time of the Africa Embassy bombings. What was disclosed during that trial, because there was a trial for Al-Qaeda members, was the detailed planning of those embassies, the doors, the windows, where people walked in, where people walked out, the shops around. Sounds eerily familiar to what we're seeing right now. This is what they do. They want high target. They want the buildings to come down, and they want lots of deaths. And there's places to put the truck if you want that. And they know. And they, you know, this sounds familiar again.
In other words, you're saying you don't need a jet airliner full of fuel. A truck is enough. I mean, we know these buildings. The New York Stock Exchange right down on Wall Street. The City Court building, of course, with the famous diagonal rooftop line up in Midtown Manhattan. IMF and World Bank, just a few blocks from the White House in Washington. Is it possible to put a truck next to or under one of these and bring it down, a World Trade Center style?
Well, bringing it down would be a lot harder, but you could cause extensive damage to at least the structure and face of these buildings, which would cause high fatalities, even if you just think broken glass killing people or the impact of the bomb. I think it would depend on both the size of the bomb. Certainly after yesterday, I think it's probably much harder to get trucks close to those buildings. That's good news. And you're not going to have a situation, for example, domestically, the Oklahoma City bombing, where a truck can just pull up, the guy can walk out and walk away and hear the bomb, you know, when he's basically four blocks away from that moment.
And yet here we've got four, five, six buildings today. Mm-hmm. The report we just heard there from Josh, maybe hundreds more that have been checked out. I mean, just how many can you draw a perimeter around? American commerce depends on trucks. American gas stations depend on fuel tankers and so on. How long can you keep trucks away from big swaths of Manhattan and Washington?
I think that's going to be the dilemma, is that now that we've reached this point where these two cities and these particular buildings are at this level, what is going to justify bringing them down? I mean, is it just going to be exhaustion that after a while, when there's no attack, we're going to say...
You mean bring down the defenses, the special defense measures.
Yes, exactly, bringing down the defensive measures. Or might it be intelligence that we gather that suggests that this plan is no longer going to be utilized by Al-Qaeda? I mean, I think that is the difficult part of how do you sustain homeland security for long periods of time? And no one has a good answer to that. The other thing that we don't have a good answer for in America is how do you talk about homeland security in a way that's fair and honest without sounding grotesque and crude? What I mean specifically is we're never going to fortify everything. People will die, unfortunately. In the military context, we have this notion of, you know, acceptable losses, right? We understand that. That's why we either do or don't go into Fallujah based on that concept. In American civilian society, we don't have that concept. So politicians can't talk about it honestly. The public can't talk about it. There's going to be a moment when we have to say, this is enough. We're not close to it yet.
This is enough.
This is enough security that we're doing the best we can.
There's going to be some measure, margin of vulnerability. We simply have to live with that.
We do.
And you live in this world, and I hear you suggesting in the way you frame this that, yes, indeed, it is going to happen somewhere, sometime, and we've got to be prepared to take some casualties with it.
I think that that's I don't like living in the world of inevitability, nor do I think that there's more that we can do to minimize the likelihood of the next terrorist attack. But I think we have to be realistic that even if we're great 99.9% of the time, there might be instances, whether it's Al-Qaeda, whether it's U.S. citizens, where people are going to be able to cause mass casualties. Unfortunately, we live in that world and we need to prepare for it and, of course, minimize the likelihood.
We've got to go to a break in just a moment here, but in a word, Does this demonstrate American strength in intelligence gathering or weakness, that all this intelligence was gathered without the U.S. apparently even knowing it?
Right. I think it's a weakness. I mean, we didn't even know that the Pakistanis had picked up Muhammad Khan until they couldn't figure out what was in fact in store. I think it's sort of a sad story in that regard.
Juliet Kimes, stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about Tom Ridge's new terror warnings over Wall Street and the symbols of American finance. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you hear in the security chief's new terror warning? Real and present danger? Vague, warmed over intelligence, politics, or real peril? Are you heartened by the reported detail of this intelligence find, or frightened by the detail of Al-Qaeda's apparent planning? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Tom Ridge's new terror warnings over Wall Street and the symbols of American finance. You can join the conversation tonight. Where do you put the odds of a terrorist attack on U.S. soil before the November 2nd elections? Where do you put the odds of U.S. authorities foiling any terror plot? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been joined in the studio tonight by Juliet Kimes, a senior fellow in national security at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government, and right now from New York by Sean Gardner. He is a reporter for Newsday at the Police Bureau in New York. Sean Gardner, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, give us a sense of the extra security precautions that have been taken around New York City today.
Well, today in New York, they basically tried to squeeze all truck traffic into the Brooklyn, Queens, what would be Long Island 2 side, into the Manhattan Bridge. And on the New Jersey side coming in, they tried to squeeze everything into the George Washington Bridge. So that way they can set up checkpoints, check every truck, and then just, you know, letting the trucks into the city that way. It's a more controlled way. What it did was, in some spots, especially in Brooklyn, it caused a backup of, you know, a couple miles. Hmm. And anyone who's gone through the George Washington Bridge from New Jersey into New York...
It's already backed up.
Yeah, who knows what it caused. So, I mean, they said it wasn't that bad, but... and as far as the police presence, they were really out in force today. We kind of get used to it here in New York. They have initiatives called Atlas and Hercules, which, like their names, they're meant to, it's a show of presence. Guys in, like, you know, soldier-looking outfits, you know, running around, lights and sirens, a bunch of cars, you know, going to these high-profile places, and they think that's, you know, that's deterring the terrorists that they're surveilling, or just giving a general sense of safety for these people. And they did a lot of that in the Citicorp building, or the Citigroup building, I guess is the correct name,
right,
and down on Wall Street.
Sean, let me ask you, did I hear you say that they were inspecting every truck coming into Manhattan today?
Yeah, every truck. And that's why they squeezed them. They wouldn't allow them to go over the Williamsburg Bridge, and wouldn't allow them into the Battery Tunnel, and they wouldn't allow them into the Holland Tunnel.
Of course, a truck could already be in Manhattan and loaded with explosives.
It could be, but yeah, I mean, if they're taking the chance that that's, you know, that's not already there, or else they would probably think they would have used it by now.
So, when you spoke with police today, Sean, how were they talking about this? As you said, they put up a show of force that they're on the ball, they're on top of this, they got the news, and they're responding to it. But is this something they can keep up? Do the police themselves think this is effective, given that there's no specific time frame given for these potential attacks?
Right, and there's no time frame for the potential attacks, and there's no time frame given for when they're going to end this. I mean, so far, you know, the police I talked to, some of them, you know, some of them are more frightened by these new threats than other people. And other people are just thinking, well, it's all the circumstances. You know, they got these new threats. It's the convention's in town. It makes sense they're going to hit New York again if they hit anywhere. So, you know, we got to be on the ball. But I don't think they can keep them up forever. I mean, they say they have about 1,000 people normally assigned to anti-terrorism task force on NYPD. Today, they weren't giving out numbers to us, but it looked like a lot more than that. I mean, it looked like, you know, it was double or triple that just in Manhattan.
And inspecting truck. It's an amazing image just to think of it with the immense amount of truck traffic there and those bridges closed to that traffic today. Sean Gardner, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
Sure.
Sean Gardner is the police bureau chief for Newsday newspaper. He joined us from New York City. Juliet Kayyem, I mean, here's, you know, New York's been on orange alert, and here they're pumping it up, bumping it up another step. How long can any city, New York included even, that was hit on 9/11 keep up that kind of posture?
I mean, it's hard to say at this stage. I mean, definitely this posture will be kept up at least through the Republican convention, and we knew that. I mean, that's a very obvious target. After that, it's hard to say. When you just have just pure exhaustion, ratcheting it up, pure exhaustion by the first responders. Ratcheting it up also is incredibly expensive for these cities, paying overtime. They're unionized. Mm-hmm. You also have this odd problem in New York and other major cities, not odd, but maybe somewhat obvious, is with both wars going on in Afghanistan and, of course, in Iraq, they've lost a lot of their first responders to National Guard.
National Guardsmen, they're off. They're on the other front.
And so you have this just sort of awful sort of mix of situations that I think in the next couple weeks, clearly high alert. After that, I think you're going to see sort of people letting their guard down a little bit. They just have to. I think it's just too hard to, every truck, you're just going to stop New York.
It's impossible over the long term. Let's turn to our callers. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Rob is calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, Rob. You're on the air.
Hi. I've got a question. I don't understand why this warning was given to the general public. Since we've got information that these guys want to hit specific places, why not keep that information secret, stake them out, wait for them to make a move, and grab them? I mean, if the police get a tip that the Purple Gang's going to hit a specific Fleet Bank in Boston, they don't tell every bank, be on the lookout. They lie in wait and grab the guys when they make their move.
Rob,
why isn't that done here?
We've got it. It's a good question. Thanks for calling in with it. Juliet, I mean, you outlined one reason,
right,
that if something should happen and they hadn't warned people, they would be in the political doghouse. But there's this dialogue, this kind of conversation with the American people and the terrorists goes on at many levels. Take us into those. And what about Rob's question?
Right.
Why not just stake it out and grab them when they come?
Well, I think Rob's right. That may seem like the obvious thing to do. I think it's hard politically, given what we know about, for example, the intelligence in the summer of 2001. But I do think there's another point here. In the same way that bin Laden appears every once in a while on his videotapes, or some senior al-Qaeda member does, and sort of yells about America and says, everyone be afraid, we are using the media, the U.S. government, is using the media and PR communications to say something to the terrorists, which is basically, we know what's up. And we, the American government population, needs to understand that a terrorism attack delayed is a plus. That's a win. It may happen a couple months from now, but, you know.
Or it may not. But if you put it off, it hasn't happened today.
Exactly. And that's a win. I mean, that's the way we have to start looking at this. And so part of going public is to say to whoever was planning this out, don't do it now. We're watching you now. And I have no doubt that that has tremendous consequences for the kind of planning that is going on in these people's minds, the terrorists' minds, in terms of when, in fact, they would attack.
So let me ask you, when you look, and we don't see the exact details, but a lot of detail was laid out here about what they've got. Is that, and the time frame from which they've got this intelligence, is that impressive to al-Qaeda? Do they say, oh, doggone it, that U.S. government is really hot on our tails? Or are they, you know, laughing in their sleeve at it because it's outdated, it's behind the curve? Is it really an effective deterrent in that sense?
I mean, we don't know if it's outdated. If it is outdated, then they are laughing at us. And they've been known to sort of try to play funky with us, so to speak. I mean, in the summer of 2001, everyone thought the attack was going to be abroad because they were clearly misleading us with the intelligence. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was here. So is this misleading intelligence? Did the guy who was captured in Pakistan sort of, let this out because he wants us to focus on New York and New Jersey, and then unfortunately it's going to be Boston? We simply can't know how they're responding to it, nor in fact how valid or current this information is.
So Tom Ridge has to make a kind of a chess move here and decide what works best on a number of levels. Politics have to be one of them, but there's public security, there's messaging to al-Qaeda itself.
Exactly. I mean, and to what extent the American public would be tolerant of hearing another announcement like this. I think in a weird way, the Democratic convention pushed this announcement a week. I think the White House has gotten so burned by trying to use these terror alerts in a political way, that they may have felt like they didn't want to do this right now. Because if you actually look at the timing, we've had this information for a couple weeks now.
But if they'd done it on the eve of the Democrats' convention, all the fingers would say,
exactly,
you're just trying to spike the drink here.
Exactly. And that's what makes me think that this is actually real, because they did still come out with it. But there were rumors before the Democratic convention, at least amongst Democratic strategists, that, oh, the White House is going to try to take away from our big party in Boston by doing something like this.
Well, Howard Dean, even over the weekend, right, saying, you know, still, I am concerned that every time something happens that's not good for President Bush, he plays this Trump card, which is terrorism, still beating that drum, though most Democrats were told today not beating it so hard this time.
Right. I think they've been privy to the intelligence and the variety of intelligence, and two is there's no point in being skeptical right now if the intelligence is real. It's just, what if something did happen?
Yeah. Let's take another call. We're at 1-800-423-TALK. Perry is calling from Janesville, Wisconsin. Hi, Perry. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to comment, you know, I think that the administration is taking far too many hits on this. We try and spin everything politically, but the truth is we are a country. The United States is a country. The world has changed for us in the last 3 years from where it was before, and we now are like the rest of the world. We can be attacked at any time. I think we have to trust that President Bush and his leadership is doing the best that they can. Nothing is perfect. We're never going to be perfectly safe. But to take every time that they say something and try and put a political spin, I just get very frustrated by that, because I try and take, if it was a Democratic leadership, Republican leadership, I hope that they're doing what they think is best, because another terror attack isn't going to be for the best of anybody.
That's for sure. Perry, we hear you loud and clear on that, but let me ask you, and I hear exactly what you're saying, but as we speak tonight, do you feel perfectly confident that this administration or any administration in the White House in the run-up to such a consequential election would definitely resist the temptation to use information like this politically?
You know, I can't say, again, I go back to the fact, I'm a Bush supporter. I believe that President Bush is doing everything realistically that he can. Mm. Are there people in any government that try and spin things? Yes, there are. Did they delay this announcement because they didn't want to get in trouble with the Democrats? Maybe they did. But, you know, you got President Bush and his group trying to do something.
Yep.
They're in charge.
Yep, they're in charge, and you want to trust them right now, because it's kind of makes a person dizzy not to trust the people who are in charge. And, Perry, we hear it loud and clear. Juliet, what do you think? You're an American watching like everybody else. Everyone wants to believe that this is straight up. On the other hand, everyone can see what the stakes are here, and we know how easily manipulated we could be. So how should Americans listen to these announcements? How should they hear them?
It's a great question. I don't have a good answer to that. I think the administration can at least be blamed for how it's used the terror threat alert system, not specifically in the past. I think it was disorganized. It was subject to politics.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in that sense, they can be accused of past conduct. But in this instance, I do believe that something has changed. And whether it's imminent or not, I think it was right for them to go public. On the politics of this, it's actually very interesting. If you look at some of the polling now, 6 months ago, however you want to look at the election, it was always wondered, well, a terrorist attack between now and the election would help Bush. I don't think that that's true anymore. I think that as you look at the numbers and people worried that we've abandoned the war on terrorism for the war in Iraq, and maybe we're not doing enough on Homeland Security, and new books are coming out saying we haven't done enough, it's not clear to me that politically this is something that the Bush administration actually would want on their plate.
So
right
in
now.
A funny way, almost a horrible way, there may be a bit less reason for doubt, because it wouldn't necessarily cut to the administration's benefit. It might look like they had failed.
I have to tell you, I mean, if you're Karl Rove thinking in your little room about the politics of the election, do you want this story or don't you? And I think because I can't answer that question, he's got to wish that this weren't happening, because of the politics about both what the Kerry administration is saying, what the American public is clearly feeling at the stage, the problems in Iraq, and then, you know, and if, you know, God forbid there is another terrorist attack.
Juliet Keim, thanks so much for joining us
Thank
tonight.
Thank you, Tom.
Been great having you. We are at 1-800-423-8255, looking at Tom Ridge's announcement over the weekend and all the measures being taken as we speak tonight in New York, in New Jersey, in Washington, D.C. You can join us, 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined right now from Greenwich, Connecticut, by Stephen Flynn. He's Senior Fellow for National Security at the Council on Foreign Relations. He served as Director of the Independent Task Force on Homeland Security, the one that was co-chaired by former Senators Gary Hart and Warren Rudman. His new book is America the Vulnerable. Stephen Flynn, thanks for being with us tonight.
I'm delighted to be with you.
Here's a question for you. It appears that a lot of this new intelligence has come from an arrest in Pakistan. Does that mean, from someone who's related to the al-Qaeda operation, presumably in that part of the world, does it mean that this is conceding that there are still communications between Pakistan, the Afghan-Pakistan border, the area where it's presumed that Osama bin Laden is hiding, and al-Qaeda cells in the United States? Does it mean that there's still command and control from Osama bin Laden Central, wherever that is?
Well, we don't really know because we don't know how recent this this material is. We don't know if it could even be prior to 9/11, and we just uncovered it. I think we need to assume that that's the case. I mean, it's certainly possible to communicate in our age. We know we can do this via the web. We can do it by other means. We can just do it by old-fashioned things, messenger, carrying it from point to point. And so, but the real issue here that I think jumps out at us with today's announcement is first that we shouldn't be surprised that what we're hearing is that we have an enemy whose goal is to attack critical infrastructure that underpins our society, the financial sector. And secondly, that they're here and able to scope this stuff out. What I've expressed concern about in this book that I recently put out is that we're treating the war on terrorism as something that we can take the battle to the enemy, and with as if the enemy is just located and can be concentrated in places like Afghanistan and Iraq. The fact is there is no central front. The reality of 9/11 is that these guys are here. They can use their own infrastructure against us. And we need to spend as much effort making ourselves a more resilient society to deal with the threat here at home as we are putting effort into locating and defeating these guys overseas.
So let me ask you, Steve Flynn, if the United States had taken some of that, $200 billion or so that's gone into Iraq and Afghanistan, or $100 plus billion in Iraq, and put it into Homeland Security, would you feel safer tonight given these specific kinds of threats that we've heard over the weekend?
I think that we really have a neglected home front. The fact is that, in part this is because this is hard. We went on a 200-year joyride where we built the critical infrastructure that underpins our society without paying any attention to security. And that was because we didn't need to, basically. When we had problems, we managed it overseas, not here at home. But that being said, these networks are very attractive targets for our adversaries. One, because they can't take us on toe-to-toe, so taking on us in the conventional way doesn't work. But what they are in a position to do is go after these open networks for which we still make very little investment in protecting.
And when you say open networks, you're referring to financial networks, energy networks. What kind of networks?
It's a broad term, but it applies to most of the systems that we depend on, our transportation systems, our energy systems, our food supply, water supply. Over the last 30 years particularly, we've made these systems more open, more efficient, more reliable, more concentrated, sophisticated, because there's more need. We depend upon them more. But in all instances, security was viewed as raising costs, undermining efficiency, undermining reliability, and making systems more closed.
And so now the terrorist rubber may be hitting the road, and those systems aren't ready to resist it. Stephen Flynn, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We want to hear a bunch more from you. We're talking tonight about Tom Ridge's new terror warnings over Wall Street and the symbols of American finance. What do you think? The Dow was up today. Wall Street went to work. Are Americans now unfazed by terror threats? Are they in denial? Why do you think finance targets are in the bullseye? And would you have shown up at work today? What would it take to make you stay home from the office? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about Tom Ridge's new terror warnings over Wall Street and the symbols of American finance. Reports of very detailed al-Qaeda stakeouts on key financial centers, the New York Stock Exchange in New York, the Citigroup building in Midtown Manhattan, the Prudential Financial Center in New Jersey, the International Monetary Fund and World Bank in Washington. What do you hear in the security chief's new terror warning? Where do you put the odds of a terrorist attack on U.S. soil before the November 2nd elections? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I've been talking with Stephen Flynn. He is Senior Fellow for National Security at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of the new book, America the Vulnerable. We're joined right now from New York City by Robert Block. He covers homeland security for the Wall Street Journal. Robert Block, thanks for joining us tonight.
Hi, I'm actually in D.C.
Oh, good. Well, good to have you from D.C. Robert, what does the financial industry think of being in the bullseye, being the target? Do they understand why they're targeted?
Well, I mean, they do. I think it's no secret for a long time, you know, everyone's understood that Al-Qaeda has wanted to attack not just the symbols of U.S. might, but also the source of it and the economy, and that's not a secret. As far as what New York and Wall Street are making of it, it's a bit confused because in some ways, the information, while very precise, seems to be not very recent. It seems to be very old. Nonetheless, rather than take any chances, security was very tight in New York, New Jersey, and Washington.
So do they? You must have talked with some of the people in charge of that security today. Do they feel like Keystone Cops running out on this old information? Do they feel like it's a sort of drama that they have to go through to respond to it? Or do they feel like, yes, we have to do this, and we're going to do it, and we're going to keep it up until we figure out what's going on?
Look, to be quite honest, I mean, Wall Street and the financial sector in particular throughout the country have probably done more than most other sectors in the country in terms of taking care of what they have to take care of, building security, cyber security. They've done very good jobs. They've changed their air conditioning. The Citibank building, the Citigroup building, which is this fantastic, the great piece of architecture in Manhattan.
Towering over Manhattan's skyline.
Right, and it has a very unusual base of sitting on, like, pins and pegs and pillars. And after 9/11, one of the first things that they did, they've been talking about it for a long time, about what if there was an earthquake. Well, they reconfigured those to make them more resistant to bomb blast. It's been tough to get into the New York Stock Exchange for years. There are metal detectors. Now, of course, that security has increased today. Nevertheless, a lot of the costs of these new security measures, and it's always better, Wall Street will figure to err on the side of caution, they have to absorb a lot of them along with the city of New York. And as they're starting to come more to terms with how imminent the threat of this information is, which doesn't appear to be too imminent, but it's difficult to say, they're wondering.
And as you and those you've talked to today looked at this list of these four or five locations, do these make sense as targets? If this is where Al-Qaeda was going to hit to damage the U.S. economy, not just symbolically but materially, are these the targets you'd choose?
Well, look, again, it comes back to the timing of when the surveillance was done. It seems that a lot of the surveillance was done pre-9/11. Some of it was done right after 9/11. So it still fits very much into the vein of that they were looking for targets, and we know from the 9/11 Commission report they're pretty good at doing that surveillance. But yes, I mean, I think it's both symbolic. I think it has greater symbolism than it does the impact it will have on the economy. Wall Street, the NASDAQ, they've taken a lot of measures for redundancy, that if things go down, that they can bounce back, that they can have continuity of operations. Nevertheless, without a shadow of a doubt, if these buildings were hit in a time of work when people were coming to work, like in 9/11, the damage would be tremendous and the loss of life would be staggering.
But with the World Trade Center, they've been hit once. They know the threat is real. Robert Block, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
A pleasure.
Robert Block covers Homeland Security for the Wall Street Journal. Warren is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Warren. You're on the air.
Hello. I kind of think that the whole terror alert system is all a bit ridiculous. And I feel that I'm at a much, much greater likelihood of dying in a car accident or having something fall on me out of an airplane from the sky than getting killed by terrorism.
So would you rather simply have Washington go about its business, alert itself when there was an issue, and not talk to the public about it, Warren?
I think that I would be a lot more comfortable if I felt that our personal privacies and civil liberties weren't being violated in the name of security. I would say that everyone has to evaluate, what am I willing to give up to be safe? And personally, because I don't feel at risk, I'm not willing to give up very much to be safe.
But when you hear the drumbeat of warning, you right away start thinking about personal liberties. Warren, let us pick it up, and thank you very much for your call. Stephen Flynn, what do you make of the system of public warnings here? Is it sensible? Is it useful? Is it too open to manipulation? Is it just what the doctor ordered?
Well, it is certainly fraught with problems. My core argument is that you have to have an ongoing conversation with the American people about the state of our vulnerability, about what the limits of what government can do, and about what the risks are that we have to live with or the cost that we have to absorb if we're going to rein in that risk. Doing this behind a closed door under sort of the cloak of secrecy and then coming out of the door every so often with these alerts, which can, I think, look to many Americans as people just trying to cover their behinds, it doesn't get us to where we need to go. At the same time, you know, there's no question that individuals in this country, the odds of them individually being hit is like a bolt of lightning or is like an earthquake. Some urban areas, it's a higher potential. But there are sectors in the society, like the energy sector and the chemical and the port system and transportation system. These systems are very vulnerable, and you can't just isolate the attack. The whole sector may be bought down. So you have to have a means of alerting people in those sectors to say, hey, you need more vigilance now. But my concern is we start from such a low baseline that it ends up looking Keystone Cops. It's not like we're making ongoing efforts to integrate security into these systems. It's basically business as usual, which is virtually no security, go to alert, and then we pull out all the stops. We get the Jersey barriers, and we get
right.
Policemen around.
Stephen Flynn, we've just got half a minute left. John Kerry says George Bush has wasted 3 years in responding to the terrorist threat. You've looked into this. You've paid attention for years. What's your assessment?
Well, I would say that the problem is he's put a lot of the eggs in the go-to-the-source basket, and he's been unapologetic about that. And the fact is, of course, that hasn't worked. So I think neither candidate has given us a real plan for how we're going to deal with our core vulnerability. I think Americans need to demand that both these candidates do so and make their judgment accordingly in this upcoming election. There is no more important issue, in my view.
Stephen Flynn, great having you with us tonight. Thanks so much for joining us.
And thank you for having me.
Stephen Flynn, Senior Fellow for National Security at the Council on Foreign Relations and author of America, the Vulnerable. Listeners, you can continue this conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on Forums. In a moment, George W. Bush and John Kerry duel over Homeland Security. This is On Point. With new terrorism warnings dominating headlines, President Bush and Democratic challenger John Kerry have been trading barbs over who will best protect the American people from terrorist attack. Both candidates campaigned in Midwestern battleground states over the weekend. At a rally in Canton, Ohio, Bush said fighting terrorism requires strong, decisive action, which he has taken. At an appearance in Grand Rapids, Michigan, Kerry said the administration has lacked a sense of urgency in dealing with the terrorist threat. Tonight we bring you sounds from the stump, beginning with President Bush in Ohio over the weekend.
After September the 11th, we looked at all the threats of the world in a new light. The lesson of September the 11th is we must take threats seriously before they fully materialize. The September the 11th Commission concluded our institutions of government had failed to imagine the horror of that day. After September the 11th, we could not fail to imagine that a brutal tyrant who hated America, who had ties to terror, had used weapons of mass destruction might use those weapons or share those capabilities with a deadly enemy. We saw a threat. I looked at the intelligence and saw a threat. Members of the United States Congress from both political parties, including my opponent, looked at the intelligence and came to the same conclusion. They saw a threat. The United Nations Security Council looked at the intelligence, saw a threat, and unanimously demanded a full accounting of Saddam Hussein's weapons and weapons programs or face serious consequences. After 12 years of defiance, he again refused to comply. He continued to deceive the weapons inspectors. And so I had a choice to make. This nation had a choice to make. Either forget the lessons of September the 11th and hope for the best and trust a madman, or take action to defend our country. Given that choice, I will defend America every time. When it comes to fighting the threats of our world, when it comes to making America safer, when it comes to spreading the peace, we're turning the corner and we're not turning back.
President Bush speaking in Canton, Ohio over the weekend. In Michigan today, John Kerry criticized the president for taking 3 years after 9/11 to implement some of the reforms announced today while speaking to a few dozen firefighters and their invited guests in Grand Rapids.
Just the other day, the administration said the following. They said, when it comes to fighting the threats of the world and making America safer and promoting the peace, we're turning the corner. Well, my friends, I see a lot of smiles out here. The threats that have gone up yesterday indicate that the threat process goes on, the threat remains. But you have to really look at the things that make a real difference to the security of our country. For months, I have been calling for a national director of intelligence. And here we are today, almost 3 years after September 11th, we still don't have a national director of intelligence. We have a commission that was stonewalled, that people didn't want to even put into existence, that you had to struggle to empower, that finally has come up with recommendations, many of which I've made over the course of the last few years, and we're waiting for a response. Let me read you, let me share a quote, because I want to be very precise about this. The co-chairman of the commission is a distinguished congressman, former congressman named Lee Hamilton. He's one of the experts in our country on terrorism, on international affairs, very respected. He's a bipartisan American. He doesn't do things partisanly. He believes in America, and he tries to find the common ground. Here's what he said. The whole government just is not acting with the urgency we think is required. Whether it's screening for cargo or checking airplane passengers or checking the airspace, much, much more needs to be done. What seems to be lacking is a real sense of urgency. So, my friends, saying that we turned the corner doesn't make it so. Just like saying mission accomplished doesn't make so.
Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry speaking to supporters in Grand Rapids, Michigan today, and President Bush speaking at a rally in Canton, Ohio over the weekend. We will bring you regular reports from the campaign trail in the weeks ahead. Thanks for joining us tonight. More details at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.